I'm Charles Stecker. I'm an assistant professor at the Tulane University School of Public Health. And I'm going to be presenting the impact of access to vaccinations in pharmacy settings on disparities in vaccination rates. And I have no financial disclosures to make. So our research question is going to be, what are the impacts of scope of practice laws for pharmacists administering vaccines on influenza vaccine coverage rates? We care, first of all, vaccines are good, and we see that these vaccination rates are lagging in disadvantaged populations, and potentially pharmacies have some power to combat that. So by allowing pharmacists to administer vaccines, we kind of harness this powerful advertising campaigns such as Get Your Flu Shot Today, which should be pretty recognizable for goals like for public health. You get advantage, you get advertised to in your store, and then as an economist working in public health, it warms my heart to see flu shots as lost leaders, so you get a free flu shot when you spend $30 at CVS. Now, this is great for people that don't have insurance, but you may be thinking that, oh, the Affordable Care Act requires all new plans to cover vaccines without a copay, so maybe the pharmacy should be actually paying people to get the vaccines there, and oh, well, you can get 20% off if you get a flu shot. To put this in prior work, people have looked at alternative settings, care in alternative settings, and found that the distance to care is an important indicator. And so with lots of pharmacy locations, more so than clinics, this is potentially a way to increase access. Previously, retail clinics have been the alternative setting of choice to get vaccines, where nurses would administer these. But retail clinics tend to be located in more advantaged populations. And with more pharmacies, there's potential for more outreach here. Work on scope of practice laws, I mean, just in general, scope of practice laws, they could be harmful when the limitations on what you can do are mismatched with the competencies that you're trained for. And then there's potential for big cost savings. Much of this literature focuses on nurses, but relevant to this presentation, prescription authority seems to be especially important for cost savings. So these are the benefits of limiting the limits in scope of practice laws, but we also have to acknowledge that the benefits of keeping scope of practice laws as they are. There's some controls for education, and maybe some potential for fragmented care if we reduce these, though kind of unacknowledged here is that there may be some financial incentives for professional organizations to preserve their prerogatives. I have a rather breathless quote, pharmacists, massage therapists, physical therapists, occupational therapists, optometrists, acupuncturists, naturopaths, homeopaths, and chiropractors have actively sought expanded scope of practice in the care of children. So how dare they? All right, so pharmacists and immunization. So a lot of this work is before pharmacists were given permission to administer vaccines, looking at early things like how pharmacists could provide cues. So just a verbal reminder, have you been vaccinated, seemed to have some detectable impact on vaccines. There were some studies done where they paired pharmacists and with nurses that could administer the vaccines that came into their clinics. And people that got vaccinated in these experimental sites cited the location and the extra hours as the two main reasons why they were getting vaccinated in a pharmacy as opposed to a doctor's office. And then a lot of people that were coming into these pharmacies for vaccinations were people that hadn't been vaccinated in the previous year. So we get some people that aren't in the regular primary care setting. So here's the context for this. This talk is looking at the number of states over time that expressly authorize pharmacists to administer vaccines. You can see it's very low it takes off in the mid-90s and then would go up to 50 if I do this today, and that's the identifying variation here. Regulations on pharmacists for vaccines, they have to be given permission to administer substances, and then they can be given explicit permission to administer vaccines, and that's often coupled with other attributes like requirements for additional training, certification of that training, some facility attributes like you have to be able to deal with adverse events, record-keeping laws, distribution of a vaccine information statement, the pharmacists have to carry malpractice insurance, and then the last three are, you know, what can you administer vaccines with a prescription specific to that patient, or the second to last one is, can a doctor issue a standing order? You can administer a vaccine to anybody who hasn't had the vaccine this year that fits these criteria. And then the last one is the most freest, allows the pharmacist to administer the vaccine by giving the patient the prescription and then administering it themselves. So restrictions remain. This talk is about influenza, but there's still, influenza is the most permissive vaccine, but also like zoster and pneumococcal face higher regulations. There's restrictions on age, so pharmacists can administer vaccines to the 18 plus in all states, but below that, it varies by state. And then prescription, which we talked about before. So data, we're going to use influenza vaccination data from the BRFAS, which is a nationally representative survey of adults 18 plus. We're going to use the 93 to 2014 waves because that's where they ask about flu shots. Unfortunately, it's going to be self-reported, so the question is just going to ask, did you get a flu shot or a nasal flu spray within the last year? We're going to get some demographic information. And altogether, this is about 6.4 million observations. So for legal analysis, we want to know when the laws took place. We had a lawyer go through Westlaw and found laws from 1971 to 2014, and then a second legal scholar went and looked through these to make sure that everything was correct. From this, we pull the effective date of the laws when they start, the authorization levels, like can you do it under your own authority, the ages it applies to in the vaccines. So our general identification strategy is going to be a differences in differences model, where we're going to look at deviations from state year averages. We don't want to compare some states to other states because those states may always have higher influenza vaccination rates. We don't want to look in certain years because, you know, a year following when the influenza vaccine was especially mismatched with the actual flu strains may see a lower immunization rate. So we're going to do that by estimating this equation. So our coefficient of interest is going to be beta here on this dummy for whether the pharmacists were allowed to administer vaccines under their own authority in that state in that year. We demean states and years, and then we include some demographic controls. And then we're going to also account for, here are my demographic controls, sex, race, ethnicity, age, education, income and bins and insurance, and we're also going to account for the complex survey design. So here's the first table of results. This is the pharmacist, whether they have any authority to administer substances. These first two columns are the OLS results, and we're not going to really use those. Instead, we're going to focus on especially column 4, which is our differences in differences model combined with our demographic controls, and we see that this really doesn't make a difference. But when we look at explicit permission to administer vaccines, we see that pharmacists have about a 4/10 of a percentage point impact on immunization. So to look at disparities, we're going to still use the differences in differences model, but we're going to change it so that our coefficient of interest is going to be this gamma here, which is going to be the interaction term between whether the pharmacists were allowed to administer vaccines and whatever this subgroup is. So we're going to look at the uninsured, some races, some incomes, and employment status. So it looks bad. Everything is negative here. So what this means is that pharmacists were a lot better at administering vaccines to people with insurance than people without insurance. They were a lot better at administering vaccines to college-educated people than people with high school degrees, and so forth. So this is about the gap between the advantage and the disadvantage, but it might be the case that both groups are trending up, so we looked at that too. So this is just a subgroup analysis where we look only among people with no insurance. Now these are all, they're all statistically insignificant, but the standard errors are wide enough to include our main results. I want to focus though on the age 65 plus over here, where it looks like pharmacists are really good at getting shots in the arms there. So we also looked at the law attributes. These things really didn't seem to make a difference, certification, record keeping requirements, or facility attributes. These things all positively impacted vaccination from pharmacists. So requiring extra training, reporting requirements about who gets vaccinated, requiring pharmacies to distribute the vaccine information statement, and then the fourth is allowing pharmacists to prescribe the vaccine themselves. So I think column 4 definitely makes sense that we should see a strong impact here. These columns, I think what's going on here is these regulations were collinear with this, so when we run these by themselves, we just kind of pick up this impact here. And lastly, the things that are harmful that hamper pharmacists' ability to administer vaccines, requiring pharmacists to carry malpractice insurance is maybe not so surprising, and then these third-party authorizations. So this column 2 would be allowing pharmacists to administer only under standing orders, and then the third is the more restrictive, requiring pharmacists to have a prescription specific to that patient before they can administer it. And you can see that all of these are negative on vaccination rates. So as we said, overall, it looks like about 4/10% impact on vaccination rates, largest in the advantage populations, except for this at-risk population of 65 plus, which are maybe the most important for flu vaccines. Restrictions that matter, third-party authorizations, malpractice insurance, and then giving pharmacists prescriptive authority seems to have a good impact. So limitations of the study, importantly, this all is self-reported immunization status, which has high sensitivity but really low specificity, which means that people mistakenly thought that they got the flu shot in the last year when they didn't. The BRFUS changes its sampling frame over the time period of our study, so we have to do some more work to account for that. But they basically incorporate cell phones, which kind of changes who responds. And with all differences in differences models, we're worried about bundled shocks. Just to pick one, influenza wasn't recommended for all adults until 2010. So we can do some things. First of all, hopefully this will be captured by the year fixed effects. But we can also look at, say, the 50-plus, which were recommended to get vaccinated before this period. So implications. If it works for flu, maybe it'll work for other vaccines like zoster and HPV, where coverage rates lag. Look at other ages. We're looking at adults here. Maybe it would work for kids. And then the Affordable Care Act has some potentially important interactions here. I mentioned that it requires insurance plans to now cover vaccines, and further, it increases insurance coverage. And so if pharmacists are especially good at vaccinating the insured people, Affordable Care Act provides more people that are insured for vaccines, maybe we'll see a change in how this relationship happens, especially with regards to disparities. So future work, we want to look at some interactions, like, you know, is it the prescriptive authority that's really important for the disadvantaged populations rather than the any authority to administer vaccines? We want to look at some kids with some other data. Look at downstream outcomes. So data on who gets the flu vax isn't very good, but data at, say, who shows up to work or who shows up to school, those are very good data. So we're going to see if there's some impact on downstream outcomes. Family effects, you can imagine that, you know, allowing everybody to get vaccinated in the pharmacy at once has a bigger impact than just one person in that family through these age restrictions. Looking at other vaccines. And then the last one is maybe a potential negative impact of this big advertising blitz. For certain populations, there's some suggestive evidence that the flu vaccine doesn't last very long. And so if pharmacies are successfully getting people vaccinated, but they're getting in earlier and earlier, there may be some mismatch between the duration of immunity and when the high flu season happens. That's all I have for you. Thanks. Questions? Oh, yes. Yeah, so we did look by race, and it looked like this wasn't, at least we couldn't detect an impact for blacks, for the subpopulation of blacks, of allowing pharmacists to administer vaccines. Though it's a little bit imprecise, our standard errors were a little bit large for us to make causal inference. That's certainly a concern. You could imagine that pharmacists might have some scope to combat that vaccine hesitancy, but couldn't really see that in our data. So our identification is state-based. So we're comparing, like, we're using one state's trend as the control for another state's trend. But, like, looking, say, regionally in the U.S., that's a thought. Thanks. Yeah. Other questions? Yeah.
So,
22. It's 1993 to 2014. Yeah, no, I should add some more, like, visual graphs to highlight that. Though, it's our identification strategy uses trends, so all of those coefficients, they control for state location and for year effects. And so this is, like, after we've demeaned it, so it's actually identified off of the trends. So those coefficients represent the trends. Yeah, so and I see where you're going. I think I share your idea that maybe as more plans cover vaccines, we should see a change in how, yeah, this works. So, right, future work, totally. Thank you. Other comments?